E-tidings, Cosmos. Good morning, 21st century world of worlds. This is Radio Richard Ireland, coming to you from within the soundproofless studio of life itself. Tomila Falcher Rothensha. I am your host, Richard McSween. Hear this, listener, give it here your fullness of ear. From the beginning there is breath, and upon that breath there are words. Beautiful old trees outside the place of my birth. Trees that I have known all my life. Trees which were surely over 100 years old have been desecrated by so-called experts in the cutting off of treetops, limbs and branches that might, say, of a windy day, be nearing too close to telephone cables. They lower their majestic heights by meters, remove so many of their gracious branches, and cut them back so tightly to the trunks as to make them appear no longer to be trees. Tears welled and brimmed all the more over at the sight. And my thoughts then flowed on to consider, if we were to remove from us that which makes us most human, namely our humanity, would we still be expecting to call ourselves human? And the sage in the digital age speaks of the philosopher of old, saying, nature alone was his keeper. Alone with nature was he exceedingly well kept. When he slept, he would have the mossy pillow be the future, the green pastureland base the present, and a long fallen old tree stump footrest the past. His coverlets were the moon and the starry heavens. He slept contentedly, dreamt delightedly, and awoke refreshingly. To him there was nothing better in a new day than life. Nothing better in a day than living, and nothing better in a new night than inheriting life. Life was the treasure of the day and the fullness of the night. Such was the wondrous manner of his thinking. Most fortunate and pleasing, they say, was it to experience first hand. In today's broadcast, I'll be reading from Prince Hamlet, Tao Te Ching, and the true classic of Southern Taoist fragrance. This is a reading in continuity from Prince Hamlet. In youth, when I did love, me thought it was very sweet to contract all the time for my behove, be thought there was nothing meet. Has this fellow no feelings of his business that he sings at grave-making? Custom had made it in him a property of easiness. 'Tis even so. The hand of little employment had the daintier sense. But age with his stealing steps had clawed me in his clutch and had shipped me into the land as if I had never been such. That skull had a tongue in it, and could sing once, how the knave jowls it to the ground, as if it were Cain's jawbone that did the first murder. It might be the pate of a politician, which this ass now overreaches, one that would circumvent God, might it not? It might, my lord. Or of a courtier which could say, good morrow, sweet lord, how dost thou, good lord? This might be my lord such a one that praised my lord such a one's horse when he meant to beg it, might it not? Aye, my lord. Why, even so, and now my lady worms chapless and knocked about the mazard with a sexton's spade. Here's fine revolution, and we had the trick to see it. Did these bones cost no more the breeding but to play at laggots with him? Mine ached to think on it. a pickaxe and a spade for and a shrouding sheet, oh, a pit of clay for to be made, for such a guest is meet. There's another. Why may not that be the skull of a lawyer? Where be his quiddities now, his quillets, his cases, his tenures, and his tricks? Why does he suffer this rude knave now to knock him about ensconced with a dirty shovel, and will not tell him of his action of battery? This fellow might be in his time a great buyer of land, with its statues, his reconnaissances, his fines, his double vouchers, his recoveries. Is this the fine of his fines, and the recovery of his recoveries, to have his fine pate full of fine dirt? Will his vouchers vouch him no more for his purchases, and double ones too, than the length and breadth of a pair of indentures? The very conveyance of his lands will hardly lie in this box, and must the inheritor himself have no more? Not a jot more, my lord. Is not parchment made of sheepskins? Aye, my lord, and of calfskins too. They are sheep and calves which seek out assurance in that. I will speak to this fellow. Tao Te Ching, Installment 5. When heaven and earth proceed their works, they do not consider benevolence. They regard all things as straw-made dogs. When the sage proceeds his work, he does not consider benevolence. He regards all people as straw-made dogs. Between heaven and earth, space functions like a blacksmith's bellow. It is void, but is not out of function. Once it is set in motion, a continuous stream of production will issue from it. And the people who like to talk face the same consequence. The more they talk, the more shortage others will know. There is no better way than to model after the Tao, and keep oneself in the void state also. This is an interpretation, after my own fashioning, of some lines from the true classic of Southern Taoist fragrance. An Autry-style visitor spoke to me, saying, "Immaculate of Era, what stories, what anecdotes, what insights do you bring to this new dawn?" A sage of the Kildare Lendry, who naturally had a great love for animals, all animals but especially horses, had this to say of a day to his king. "Your Majesty, horses can with their hoofs tread on the hoar frost and snow, and with their hair withstand the wind, cold, and rain. They feed on the grasses and drink of the waters. They rub necks and prance and leap about playfully. This and the like is of the true nature of horses. Though you were to construct lavish stables for them, they would have no interest at all in them. What if I were to have them be made simple in their design, resembling as much as possible their homeland in the hills of the south? They would still prefer by far, Your Majesty, to stay in the hills, with all its discomforts and unpredictability, for they would be free there to roam at their leisure. I would have them have the finest of trainers, the most experienced, and would harness them in splendid trappings with golden-ringed bits in their mouths." "Why would you need to train them, Your Majesty, and harness them in trappings and place bits in their mouths?" "I want to have them race before me in my court in big circles. Make them run real fast if they will, but if they don't, then with some persuasion from riders on their backs. They would need to be trained as such on how they may best obey their riders. But of course I would be employing only the finest of trainers, who would be as gentle with them as they need to be. There was once in long of ago, Your Majesty, a certain horse trainer, or at least that is the title he went by, who was said to know how to get inside a horse's mind. Would he have been considered the finest horse trainer of his day? Hear what I have to say, Your Majesty, and you can well judge for yourself whether he was or he wasn't. This trainer used to boast he knew more than anyone else on the island, Your Majesty, how to effectively train horses, how to make horses of the hills have no choice left to them but to quickly surrender up to him their carefree nature. And now, I'm not going to go into details, Your Majesty, for that is not in me to be able to describe his methods. Sufficient it will be for you to know that if he had removed, say, 50 horses from their home in the hills and straightaway started to train them, then half of them, yes, half of them, would be dead from the severity of his treatment of them within a month. From the remaining, two-thirds of them would be dead within a week. By the sixth week, there would be left at most two or three horses standing, and from them he would have gotten one to almost completely surrender up its carefree nature to him. Say no more, for I get the drift of what you are saying. But just out of curiosity, how many years did he spend training horses? Was he at it all his life? 19, Your Majesty, before meeting his lightning. What happened to him? While attempting to capture a much sought-after stallion of the southern hills, he was fatally hind-legged by him into a bog, Your Majesty. Were there such as he in days of old? To which do you make reference, Your Majesty, to the trainer or to the stallion? Well, when you put it that way, the two of them. In a dawn reverie of this new day, meditated I on what an immortal self of mine did say, did lovingly relay way back in days of long, long, long gone by. O mortal self of mine, when with living in your own realm and time, you shall be your own shepherd, you shall not lack of anything. Remember whenever and wherever to bravely speak out on issues when you know quite well you ought to. Refuse to let yourself silence you. The upcoming repeal here on the Isle of Ireland of the 8th Amendment of the Constitution Act 1983, which acknowledges the right to life of the unborn with due regard to the equal right to life of the mother, is such an issue in need of your courageous response. Say no on Referendum Day, Friday 25th of May, to the making of a law that would fast-track us as individuals and as a people to inhumanity. The beloved lives in the wombs of tomorrows will to us in their own way be eternally grateful and ever so proud of us. All right, I will leave it at that for today. Enjoy taking very good care of yourself and those around you. Be ever so grateful for your many blessings. You have been listening to an Irish philosopher of the natural kind bringing radio to the internet via Radio Richard Ireland. On the air globally for about 15 minutes, Monday to Friday. The script format of today's broadcast will be available at a future date on AuthenticCloseterDramascripts.com. It is truly an honor to have your listening. May you be a blessing unto yourself by way of your past, by way of your present, and by way of your future. Slán agus beannacht leat.